10 years ago, when we started thinking about this problem, which hopefully you remember here, we thought about how do Linux kernel developers actually reason about change. So the way the kernel developers think about changes is in terms of patches. So a patch, it's a very nice thing. It's a very precise description of a change, and it's something that can be automatically applied to the code that it's relevant to. The problem with a patch, though, is that it only affects one part of the code, and so it's not going to be a suitable way to achieve our goal, which is to finding and modifying code all over the kernel. So the simple idea that we had 10 years ago was to take this idea of a patch and abstract it to what we called a semantic patch. So the idea of a semantic patch is it keeps the same idea we had with patches, which is that it's based on fragments of code that are going to be removed and added. But then it's just abstracted just a little bit away from the parts of the code that we're not very interested in. So for example, in this case, what's important to us is that there's a kmalloc followed by memset. So kmalloc is the kernel function for allocating memory. Memset, everyone's familiar with for updating all of the locations in the memory. And the kernel developers wanted to merge these two functions into one function called kzalloc. So we see the names of those functions. We see the value 0 here, so those are the important things. And then we abstract away from the rest, which can be any arbitrary expressions. So now we have a small specification. It's a readable specification, and it can be applied to the entire code base to make the change that we want. So we call our language the semantic patch language. The tool that applies this language to the code is called Coxinelle. We started the development in 2006, and it was released in open source in 2008, so 10 years ago. So we can look at the usage that it has achieved. So we're targeting Linux kernel developers, and so we can see to what extent we have actually managed to reach those developers and get them to use the tool we propose. There have been, in the last 10 years, there have been over 5,500 commits in the Linux kernel that mention Coxinelle. Some of these, in the beginning in particular, they come from our own team. We had our tool, we wanted to use it to show other people how to use it. But in recent years, it's also been used by kernel maintainers, other kinds of kernel developers, and so on. So these numbers also may be underestimates, because nothing actually forces people to report that they've used a particular tool in developing a particular commit. Another bit more specialized statistic, we thought about who are the developers who do these kind of really big changes. So we went around and found all the people who had ever made a commit that made changes to at least 100 files. And about half of the 88 people who have ever done that have used Coxinelle to do something, not necessarily for that, but they're aware of Coxinelle. So we seem to be reaching the kind of people who are our target audience. So then the question is, how do we get here? How do we go from a research prototype that was developed for a paper, just like all of the tools that have been presented in this conference, to something that is sort of part of the common knowledge of Linux kernel community? So we look at Coxinelle in terms of four dimensions: expressivity, performance, correctness guarantees, and dissemination. So I'll talk about the decisions we made in the beginning and how those decisions had to be affected, if they had to be affected over time. So I'll start with expressivity. So the basic idea of our approach, the sort of the underlying foundation, is this idea of the semantic patch, of of change specifications that are written in terms of code fragments that should be easy for people to read, understand, communicate to others, and apply to the code. So basically, our original hypothesis is that Linux kernel developers will find it easy and convenient, so those are the really important things that should be easy and convenient for them, to describe needed code changes in terms of fragments of removed and added code. So that was the basis of our approach. Over time, maybe things changed a little bit. So the first change, it's a bit cosmetic, but in the beginning, we anticipated certain kinds of things that people might like to change: function calls, function definitions, variable declarations. Over time, kernel developers and other kinds of people said, we want other things. We want to modify bitmaps and so on. So we had to sort of flesh out our language to target more of the complete C language. And then there have been several other evolutions in terms of expressivity that have been a bit more conceptual. So our basic idea of the language, remember, is that we have patterns, and those patterns are going to match code fragments. So one of the changes was sort of the idea of a pattern, but it's going to match something other than a code fragment. In particular, it's going to match the position of a code fragment. And so these position metavariables, basically, you attach it to any term, and it will give you the position of that term. It can be used for, you have a term and you have a pattern, it matches something, and you want to match the same thing again at the same position. So then you can express something in several different ways, get different perspectives on its contents. And you can also match things that are different than a position. So you can express things in negative ways using these position variables. So that was one dimension of change. Another dimension of change was, again, we have this idea of everything should be based on pattern matching, but we all know that doing other kinds of computation is useful sometimes, and so we added scripting language interaction in order to be able to do other kinds of computation. So at the moment, you can just freely switch back and forth between pattern matching and scripting language, and they can communicate terms back and forth between them. So this is just a very simple, concrete example of how these two things fit together. So this is an example of a semantic patch, which is part of the Linux. It's integrated with the Linux kernel. It's part of the Linux kernel source distribution. And this was actually a semantic patch that was developed by other people, the DRM community. They had some functions they didn't want people to use anymore. And so it's a quite simple example. But basically, they're matching calls to these functions that they don't like. They take the position variable, so we know what position those calls occur in. We have the argument, so we know what the call is being applied to. So this is a code matching rule. Afterwards, we have a script rule, and the script rule is just going to print out an error message. It says on line 27 of some file, you have this function that is being applied to these arguments, and we don't like that function anymore. Please do something else. So this is a very simple example, but you can do whatever you like, actually. So we made these new features. New features are only beneficial if people actually use them. And so it's a bit hard to tell what people are using, what people are not using, because there's, again, nothing that forces people to publish their semantic patches. However, fortunately, about 3,000 of the 5,500 commits in the Linux kernel that use Coxinel have actually included their semantic patches, and so we can see what they do. And about 20% of these use position variables, and a smaller percentage use scripts. But at least we can see that around half of these semantic patches that use these new features come from outside the Coxinel developers, and so we have somehow managed to disseminate this idea about these new functionalities of the language. And actually, all of the 59 semantic patches that are part of the Linux kernel use both of them just because they all give these kind of error reporting, line number and file name and so on. And so then people can see examples of how to use these features. Okay, so the next thing is performance. So you may have a very nice language, a very nice tool, but if it takes 3 hours for it to do a simple thing, then maybe people will get frustrated with it rather quickly. So performance is important, and what we really want is that the tool should be easy to use on the standard laptop that you're using for all of your other development. So you shouldn't have to go off and do something special in order to be able to use the tool. So already in 2007, when we were kind of near the beginning of the project, the Linux kernel was 5 million lines of code. That's quite big, so it was clear that we were going to need to do something in order to ensure good performance. And so our initial design choices in this direction was mainly just to reduce the amount of code that needed to be considered. So we work on one function at a time, inside of one file at a time. We mostly only work on C files. .c files, we don't include very many header files. Header files can really explode the size of the Linux kernel. We don't really want to do that often. The kinds of things that you want to do with Coxinel, this kind of API function renaming that I showed in the example, there's no influence. We don't need to know whether ints are 32 bytes or 64 32 bits or 64 bits in order to be able to convert kmalloc to memset, kmalloc to kzalloc. And so a lot of the details that are in the header files, it's like hardware specific things, it's not relevant to what we're trying to do. Another thing which is sort of on the boundary between performance and expressivity is that we don't want to expand macros in the source code. We want people to be able to reason about the code in the way they see it on their screen. So that's sort of an expressivity issue, but it's also a performance issue in that by not expanding macros, we don't need to know the definitions of the macros, and then again, we don't need the header files, and that saves a lot of time. And another similar thing between expressivity and performance is that we don't do any kind of automatic analysis. Our point of view was that analyses are often they might be sound but not complete, or complete but not sound, and it's hard for the user to understand the results and anticipate what's going on. So our idea was just not to do any kind of analysis whatsoever. If the user wants to put some kind of constraints on the way the values flow around in the matched code, then they can express that using the pattern language. Again, analyses take time, and so not doing any analyses also saves a lot of time that, again, might not be relevant to the particular transformation you want to do anyway. So those were our initial ideas. Those are kind of very generic performance optimizations. We were still confronted with the fact that the Linux kernel is really big. It's hard to hide that 1 million lines of code even, or 5 million lines, or 15 million lines is just really big. And our parsing is actually rather slow because of these heuristics we use for macros. There's some kind of backtracking involved, and it takes quite a lot of time in some cases. So we had some further improvements to reduce the amount of code that's being manipulated. In particular, now we sort of specialize the set of files that are considered to the important things in the semantic patch. If you think about my example previously, if there's no kmalloc in the file or if there's no memset, that rule is not going to do anything. And so it's only worthwhile to parse files that actually contain both of those keywords. And so that makes an enormous savings. And we also figured out about parallelism. It's sort of obvious. Since we're only treating one file at a time, they're all independent of each other. And so we can, if we treat 40 files at a time, maybe it will go a bit faster. So we can look at performance. So these numbers were done on my laptop. So it's a ThinkPad. It's kind of a standard Linux kernel developer machine. There's basically three categories of results here. So what we have here is the number of files which are actually considered. So this is after the filtering. And so actually, these are the semantic patches that are in the Linux kernel. For many of them, actually, there are very few files that are actually relevant to the semantic patch. And in these cases, it goes in maybe tens of seconds, or even under 10 seconds here. Another category we see here, there's some dots in terms of the number of files, which are very high. So we didn't actually succeed to do any filtering at all. We're taking all of the files in the Linux kernel. And this is taking in the hundreds of seconds, so a few minutes. And actually, there's only a few outliers over here. This one is, these are actually not the entire Linux kernel, so it's not, the problem is not the number of files being considered, it's the complexity of the task that is being performed. So this point here is around 2,000 seconds. This is, I would say, under 1 hour. And it's sort of coincidentally the time that it takes to compile the Linux kernel if you start from scratch. So it's kind of a time that Linux kernel developers are comfortable with. And so then there's this one point we have which is out above that time. But still, most of the examples can be run on the entire Linux kernel in a very short amount of time. Of course, a normal developer is only working on a few files at a time, and if he wants to run all of these 59 semantic patches on just those few files, it will be much faster. Okay, so the next issue is correctness guarantees. So our decision is that we pretty much don't do anything to ensure the correctness of the results. We're providing a programming language. You express what you want to express. And if things don't go well, it's your responsibility to study the results and see that things are not doing what they're supposed to do. So the only kind of correctness guarantees we offer is in terms of syntax. We ensure, for example, the sequence of statements is replaced by another sequence of statements. So that's sort of the basic thing you need to be sure that the code is going to actually parse when it comes out the other side. And so this lack of correctness guarantees it's actually very important if you want to fix bugs. Obviously, you want to change the semantics, and so it's not going to be semantics preserving. Evolutions, often it's only worthwhile to actually automate part of an evolution. There's some other cleanups you might want to do by hand, so actually even the evolution might not be semantics preserving. So basically not having to prove that everything is correct gives you more expressiveness because you can do whatever you want, and obviously gives you more performance because proving these things takes time. We rely a lot on the developer's knowledge, so the whole point of view of this approach is that we're targeting Linux kernel developers who are supposed to be experts in their system. They're not necessarily experts in program analysis, so that's the bridge that we're trying to cross. They should know when they get their output whether things are wrong or right, and if things are not correct, then they can improve their rule. You can see the rule is very concise and readable. You can make some changes to it to work in a better way. So this is a hypothesis that we are sticking with. There have been indeed some incorrect changes that have been introduced due to the use of Coxinel, but it seems that most of these are things where the rule developer just didn't understand some invariant of the kernel. Even if you were doing some kind of proof, some kind of maybe localized proof, you might provide it incorrect invariants and you would end up with the same situation. Finally, dissemination. So you have your tool, it works well, it runs fast, but nobody's going to use it if they don't know about it. So our first idea was just to participate in Linux kernel development and use the tool and mention that we'd use the tool. So we submitted various patches over time, and we attracted some interest from Linux developers. In 2008, some developers from outside of our group started to use the tool. In 2008, it was released in open source, which I think counts for a lot among certain Linux kernel developers from a sort of a conceptual point of view. So this generated some interest in the Linux kernel community, and then we organized some workshops and participated in some conferences, gave presentations, and so on. And then also, there were some Linux kernel developers who were not associated with our group who wrote some articles for the Linux Weekly News, which is a very well-respected journal in the Linux community, and that gave further visibility. So I have now a few more graphs about the impact. So this, you saw how many commits had been done using the Coxinel over time. So this is another point of view, how many lines are removed and added. This is a log scale, so you can see drivers is much higher than everybody else. But it's natural because there's much more driver code than anything else. There's also quite a lot of use in networking, file systems, and so on. We looked at what have people done with it, focusing on maintainers just to have a manageable data set. Maintainers are people who are responsible for everything about a particular subsystem. We see that they mostly do cleanups. In particular, in 2015, there was a lot of use for some major restructurings, but there are also some bug fixes. Actually, Linux kernel community is very receptive to different tools, and there's a number of tools which are related, static analysis tools which are used for finding bugs. Coxinel is the only easily user configurable one which will actually do changes for you. So we kind of fit in a different space. Some examples of what people have done, removing unused function arguments, removing redundant fields in a data structure. And then this one is sort of reorganizing interrupt handlers. Interrupts are very pervasive, obviously, in the Linux kernel, and this affected almost 200 files. So the statistics I've shown so far are based on patches which are actually present in the Linux kernel history. There's also changes that people have made that have not actually made it into the Linux kernel. You have a developer, he's working on his own Git tree, he commits some things, and the Linux kernel has a zero-day build testing service run by Intel where people can register their own Git trees with this service, and they make some changes, and then the service will go and run a whole bunch of static analysis tools on the code that they've made. So we can see, actually, Coxinel has found hundreds of issues in this way. So some of them, Coxinel is able to provide a patch I mean, it just depends on how the rule is written. It's able to provide a patch, and in some cases, it's able to provides a warning message. So these are things like missing unlocks, double freeze, and so on. Open source system, the thing that's very important is its community. That's the way it lives over time. Maybe Coxsone is a little bit weak in this direction because what we're targeting, the problem is we're targeting operating systems, a community, but our code base is dealing with programming languages issues. So there's not so many people that are actually experts in both and who can be both users and contributors to the system. So most of the changes have been made by people in the Coxsone team. On the other hand, there's an active mailing list, and people give each other suggestions about how to write their semantic patches. So there's a good understanding of how the tool works. It's also available for many Linux distributions, and it's used in a number of other systems, like always C code, though. In conclusion, we started about 10 years ago. We had a number, basic design decisions, and those have mostly stood the test of time, although we've had to make some extensions. Some points that we found very important was to taking the expertise of the target community into account and just staying with our one idea, avoiding adding too many new features that would somehow bloat the system and make it confusing and fall apart and so on. It's also very important for the tool, any tool, to be easy to access, easy to install. When you try to use it, it should actually do the thing you want it to do. So we try to have made a great effort toward the general robustness of the tool. And as a measure of success, over 5,500 commits in the Linux kernel are based on Coxsone. So probably everybody in this room, whether you know it or not, is using the result of this tool in some way. Maybe on your phone, maybe when you send email, all sorts of things. So here's the tool. The more information is available here. And so thank you.
We have time for a few questions. Let me start. You mentioned that keeping the tool lightweight is important for keeping it efficient and usable. Can you give examples of features that people have thought of or requested that you decided not to include?
Maybe some kind of program analysis, like use def analysis, like we have x equals 3 here, mm-hmm. and then later on you have a reference to x, and is it still the 3? Or was there some other update to x in between, or were there aliases in between, or was there a previous and a equals and x, or a equals and x, and a got changed, and these kinds of things. And so we don't do that. We rely on the fact that Linux kernel code is written, it's an open source system, it's written to be understood. And doing these things that are hard for the tool to understand is also hard for people to understand, and so people shouldn't do that in the first place.
Sure. Keith Smith from NetApp. So I've never used your tool, so apologies if I'm a bit naive. Mm-hmm. I imagine there's all of the core programming language stuff, which doesn't really care whether you're using Linux, running it on Linux or some other source code base. Mm-hmm. And then there's some infrastructure that's there for Linux to find all the files and knows where source code lives and what it looks like and stuff like that. So if I had some other code base I wanted to use this on, how hard is it to pick up your tool and teach it about my code base so that
okay.
it can...
So there are basically two issues. One issue is parsing. So we are not expanding macros. We're not looking for your header files. And so we have heuristics that parse your more strange-looking macros. But those heuristics are designed for the more strange-looking Linux kernel macros. Mm-hmm. And so you might have some strange-looking macros in your system. Coxsone has an option where you can just parse your C code, and you can see what percentage mm-hmm. of lines are actually parsed, and it will tell you that certain lines, certain constructs, certain words are causing problems often, and you can make dummy macro definitions for those words, and you can usually get it up to 95% of the lines of code being parsed. Often things that are not parsed are things like actually macro definitions, and often you don't care about updating those things mm-hmm. either. The other thing that we rely on is, since we work on only one function at a time, we are happy that Linux kernel functions are often quite big, And so you can get a lot of information in a function. So if your project is organized such it has many very small functions, then things might not work out as well. But I haven't really gotten complaints in that direction. People sometimes ask about parsing issues. So.
Okay. Cool. Thank you.
Last question.
So is there any reason why you only consider .c file? How about the .s file?
So you ask about the .s file. So like, you mean like inline assembly?
Yes.
So we didn't feel like parsing inline assembly, and so we just don't. Actually, you're the first person to ask for it.
Okay, thanks again.